Then, gradually, the downpouring of earth and rock began to subside. The breath-stopping impact of great boulders into their shelter became less frequent. The fine dust they were breathing began to settle. The rumbling and roaring let up gradually, until the only sound was the slip and slide of settling earth and rock and the burble of the river below them. Warily, Nicholas at last lifted his head and tried to blink the dust off his eyelashes. Rohan stirred under him, and he crawled back to let her sit up. They stared at each other. Their faces were caked into kabuki masks with the antimony white dust, and their hair was powdered like the wigs of 18th-century French aristocrats. "You're bleeding," Rohan whispered, her voice husky with dusk and terror. Nicholas lifted his hand to his face, and it came away covered with a paste of dust and blood. "It's just a nick," he said. "How are you?" "I think I may have twisted my knee. I felt something give when we fell. I don't think it's serious. There is very little pain." "Then we have both been ridiculously lucky," he told her. "Nobody deserved to survive that." She made an effort to stand, but he restrained her with a hand on her shoulder. "Wait. The entire slope above us is broken and unstable. Give it time. There'll be loose rocks coming down for a while yet." He untied the paisley bandana from around his throat and handed it to her. "Besides which, we don't want..." But he changed his mind and did not finish his sentence. While she wiped her face, she asked shakily, "You were going to say, besides which?" "Besides which, we don't want to give those bastards up there any idea that we have survived their little party. Otherwise we will have them down here finishing the job, cutting throats. Much better they believe that we snuffed it, as intended." She stared at him. "Do you think they're still up there, watching us?" "Count on it," he answered grimly. "They must be pretty chuffed with the fact that they have at last succeeded in getting rid of you. We don't want to pop our heads up right now and spoil it for them." "How did you know what was going to happen?" she asked. "If you hadn't grabbed me..." Her voice petered out. In a few words he explained about the scrap of gelignite wrapping. "Simplest thing in the world, to pick one of the narrowest sections of the trail and mine the cliff." He broke off. As faintly but unmistakably, there came the sound of an aircraft engine and the flutter of rotors in fully fine pitch for takeoff. "Quickly," he snapped at her. "Get in as close as you can to that overhang." He pushed her back against the sheltering boulder. "Lie flat." When she obeyed without question, he lay beside her and piled loose rubble over them both. "Lie still. Don't move, whatever you do." They lay and listened to the sound of the helicopter approaching and circling overhead. It moved up and down the valley, flying a few feet above the surface of the river. At one point it was directly above the ledge on which they lay, and they were buffeted by the downdraft of the rotors. "Looking for survivors," said Nicholas grimly. "Don't move. They haven't spotted us yet." "If they were watching us before the blast, they should have been able to come directly to where we are," she whispered. "They seem confused." "They must have lost us in the dust of the avalanche and the break-up of the cliff face. They aren't sure where we're lying." The sound of the helicopter moved off slowly along the river, and Nicholas told her, "I'm going to risk a peep to make sure it's the Pegasus job. Not that there can be many other choppers in this area. Keep your head down." He lifted his head slowly and cautiously, and one glance was sufficient to confirm all his speculations. Half a mile upstream, the Pegasus Jet Ranger hovered above the river. It was moving slowly away from him, so that from this angle Nicholas was unable to see through the windscreen into the cockpit. But at that moment the engine beat changed as the pilot changed pitch and pulled on the collective. As the aircraft rose vertically and turned northwards, Nicholas caught a glimpse of the passengers. Jake Helm sat in the front seat beside the pilot, and Colonel Nogo was in the seat behind him. They were both staring down into the river valley. But in seconds the helicopter lifted them away, and the machine disappeared beyond the ridge, flying in the direction of the escarpment, and the sound of its engines dwindled into silence. Nicholas crawled out from beneath the boulder and pulled Rohan to her feet. "No more doubts. We know who we're dealing with now. That was Helm and Nogo in the chopper. Helm almost certainly laid the jelly, and Nuggo probably led the men who hit our camp last night. Each of them doing the job he does best, Nicholas told her. So that confirms it. Whoever owns Pegasus is the ugly behind all this. Helm and Nuggo are merely the stooges. But Nuggo is an officer in the Ethiopian army, she protested. Welcome to Africa. He did not smile as he said it. Here everything is for sale at a price, including government officials and army officers. Now he scowled so that the cake dust on his face was dislodged and filtered down in a fine powdering. Now, however, our main concern is to get out of the gorge and back to civilization. He looked up the slope. The trail above them had been obliterated beneath the rockfall. We can't get back that way, he told her, and took her hand. But when he lifted her to her feet, she gasped and quickly shifted her weight to her right leg. Oh, my knee! Then she smiled bravely. It'll be all right. However, she was limping heavily as they scrambled down to the river, terrified that their movements would set off another rock slide. They ended up waist-deep in the water under the bank. Royan stood behind Nicholas and washed the blood and dust from the wound in his scalp. Not too bad, she told him. Doesn't need a stitch. I have a tube of betadine in my pack, he said. He fished it out, and she smeared the wound with the yellow-brown ointment before binding it up with the paisley bandana. That'll do, she patted his shoulder. Thank the Lord for my bum bag, Nicholas remarked, as he zipped it closed. At least we have a few essentials with us. Now our next job is to look for any other survivors. Tamri, she exclaimed. They floundered along the bank. The river was clogged with loose rock and earth that had fallen from the cliff. In the deeper places they were forced in up to their armpits, and Nicholas carried his pack at arm's length above his head. The loose rock was treacherous and gave way under them when they tried to scramble out of the water to search for other members of the caravan. They found the bodies of two of the monks, both of them crushed and half buried. They did not even attempt to dig them free. One of the mules lay with one leg in the air and the rest of its body completely covered with broken rock. The pack that it had carried had burst open, and the contents were scattered about. The rolled skin and trophies of the Dik-Dik had been churned into the muck. Nicholas rescued them and strapped them onto his bum bag. More to carry, Royan warned him. Only a pound or two, but worth it, he replied. They made their way towards the point below the trail where they had last seen Tamri and Ali. But though they searched for almost an hour, they found no sign of either of them. The slope above them was devastated. Raw, ravaged earth, great rocks shattered, bushes and trees uprooted and smashed to kindling. Royan climbed as high as her injured leg enabled her, then cupped her hands around her mouth and shouted, Tamri! 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 The echoes took her cry and flung it from wall to valley wall. I think he's done for. The poor little devil's been buried, Nicholas called up to her. We've been at it an hour now. We cannot afford more time if we are to get out ourselves. We'll have to leave him. She ignored him and worked her way along the rock slide, loose scree rolling under her feet, and he could see that the knee was giving her pain. Tamri, answer me, she called in Arabic. Tamri, where are you? Royan, that's enough. You're going to damage that knee even more. You're putting both of us at risk now. Give it up. At that moment, they both heard a soft groan from higher up the slope. Royan scrambled up towards the sound, slipping and sliding back almost as far as she climbed, but at last she gave a cry of horror. Nicholas dumped his pack and went up after her. When he reached her side, he too dropped to his knees. Tamri was pinned down in the rubble. His face was barely recognizable. It was torn and lacerated, with half the skin ripped off. Royan had lifted his head into her lap and was using her sleeve to wipe the filth out of his nostrils to allow him to breathe more freely. Blood was oozing from the corner of his mouth, and when he groaned again it welled up in a fresh flood. Royan dabbed at it, smearing it across his chin. His lower body was buried, and Nicholas tried to clear the broken rocks, but almost immediately he realized the futility of it. A lump of raw rock the size of a billiard table lay across him. It weighed many tons, and must certainly have crushed his spine and pelvis. No single man would be able to move that massive weight unaided. Even if it were possible, the grinding action of any movement would inevitably aggravate the terrible injuries that Tumri had already sustained. "Do something, Nicky," Rayan whispered. "We have to do something for him." Nicholas looked at her and shook his head. Rayan's eyes flooded with tears, and they broke over her lower lids and scattered like raindrops into Tamri's upturned face, diluting the blood to the pink of rosé wine. "We can't just sit here and let him die," she protested. And at the sound of her voice, Tumri opened his eyes and looked into her face. He smiled through the blood, and that smile lit his dusty, broken face. "Ami," he whispered, "you are my mother. You are so kind. I love you, my mother." The words were bitten off, and a spasm stiffened his body. His face contorted with agony, and he gave a soft, strangled cry, and then slumped. The rigidity went out of his shoulders, and his head rolled to one side. Rayan sat for a long time, holding his head and weeping softly, but bitterly, until Nicholas touched her hand and said gently, "He is dead, Rayan." She nodded. "I know. He held on just long enough to say goodbye to me." He let her mourn a little longer, and then he told her softly, "We must go, my dear. You are right. It is so hard to leave him here. He never had anybody. He was so alone. He called me mother. I think he truly loved me." "I know he did," Nicholas assured her, lifting the boy's dead head from her lap and helping her to her feet. "Go down and wait for me. I will cover him the best I can." Nicholas crossed Tumri's hands upon his chest and folded his fingers around the silver crucifix that hung around his neck. Then he piled loose rock carefully over him, covering his head so that the crows and vultures could not reach him. He slid down to where she waited in the water and slung his pack over one shoulder. "We must go on," he told Rayan. She wiped away the tears with the back of her hand and nodded. "I am ready now." They waded upstream, pushing hard against the current. The rock slide had blocked half the riverbed, and the waters squeezed through the gap that was left. When at last they reached the point on the bank above the avalanche, they climbed out of the river and picked their way up the steep bank until at last they could crawl out onto the intact section of the pathway. They took a moment to recover and looked back. The river below the rock slide was running red-brown with mud. Even if the monks at the monastery downstream had not heard the explosions, they would be alarmed by that flood of discoloured water and would come to investigate. They would find the bodies and take them down for decent burial. That thought comforted Rayan a little as they struck out along the trail with 2 days' hard travel still ahead of them. Rayan was limping heavily now, but each time Nicholas tried to help her, she brushed his hand away. "I'm all right. It's just a bit stiff." She would not allow him to inspect the knee, but kept on stubbornly along the trail ahead of them.